Good afternoon. The Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue is open. We're going to go through our agenda as it's written, and we're going to start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 500. Mr. Allenette, can you give us a brief overview?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 500 modifies a property tax exemption for veterans with disabilities and surviving spouses, and it takes the current exemption, which is either $15,000 or $18,000, depending on the disability or if it's a service-connected disability, and increases those to a base amount of either $60,000 or $65,000. And it also creates a third category of property tax exemption of up to $150,000. And it allows counties to create eligibility limits for the larger exemption, but taxpayers who would be ineligible for that larger one due to income levels would still be allowed to claim a lower property tax exemption.
Okay, we have some people we've seen before. Proud to have them back up here, Wayne Harvey and Steve Bates. Want to come up together?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee, my fellow veterans and distinguished guests. For the record, my name is Wayne Harvey. I'm a veteran from Happy Valley. I served the United States Army for over 20 years, and I am the immediate past chairman of the UVGO, United Veterans Groups of Oregon, and the immediate past president of the Retired Enlisted Association here in the state of Oregon. I came today to join with my fellow veterans and to add support for Senate Bill 500. This legislation will increase the tax exemption for property tax for our most deserving disabled veterans and their surviving spouses. I want to go on record to thank Senator Olson and Senator Manning for their unwavering commitment to improving the lives of our veterans and their families here in Oregon, and for sponsoring this needed piece of legislation. Hopefully one day Oregon can follow Alabama, Arkansas, Hawaii, Maryland, Michigan, Mississippi, Missouri, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Texas, Virginia, and Washington State, where totally disabled veterans receive a complete full property tax exemption. For now, I believe that Senate Bill 500 will go a long way in helping Oregon to do what we can to lessen the financial strain of these veterans that have given so much for our state and our nation. I strongly urge your support moving this bill out of committee as quickly as possible with a due pass recommendation and onto the floor for a vote as needed. Thank you very much.
Chair Haas, Vice Chair Bentz, and committee members, I'm Steve Bates. I'm the chair of the Committee on Memorials and Remembrance, which is a committee of the Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 271 here in Salem. For almost 100 years, Oregon has honored its wounded warriors, our disabled veterans, with a property tax exemption. At one time, research shows this exemption was over 100% of the value of a median single-family dwelling in Oregon. This is fitting, as our wounded warriors have given a portion of their body, a part of their being, in the service of our country. But this exemption has been reduced to less than 10% of the value of a medium-priced single-family home. This is an unfortunate result of not reviewing old laws and updating them to meet current needs. The original Oregon State statute that authorizes this property tax exemption references Civil War disabled veterans and their surviving spouses. Clackamas County started this exemption in 1921, to give you an idea that we have a law that has been slow to be updated to our current economic times. This law has been modified only a few times since 1953. When real estate values started escalating in the late 1970s, the disabled veterans property tax exemption started to dwindle. The exemption amounts remained the same, while the assessed valuation of properties grew. The amount of exemption became less and less. Over the past several years, there have been attempts to correct this situation. but it appears that politicians decided to not maintain a reasonable property tax exemption for our wounded warriors. The 2005 legislature did make some amends. A 3% annual increase was added to the disabled veterans property tax exemption. A disabled veteran inferred in a 2015 testimony that the 3% increase would not even buy a dinner for two. In other words, this is not enough. What was once 100% is now less than 10%. Do we still care about our disabled veterans? They made a sacrifice for all of us. We must make sure that they are appropriately honored. Because political sentiment identifies that 100% exemption would be too costly to our counties and cities, Senate Bill 500 is a compromise. In this day of homelessness and housing shortages, doesn't it make sense to reduce the property tax burden of our wounded warriors to keep them in their own homes? This bill also addresses the severely disabled veteran. It creates a new category that would allow an even greater property tax exemption if certain requirements are met. Senate Bill 500 also gives the local county commissioner, county court, the option to control the levels of this particular exemption. It will not be 100%. This is a compromise that should be nonpartisan. This Senate Bill 500 is doing something. Previous legislative sessions have come and gone and the politicians did nothing. Something is better than nothing. Let Oregon once again stand for our wounded warriors. Let us increase the disabled veteran property tax exemption this year. Please pass Senate Bill 500 on so that it can become the law of the land. Thank you.
Question for Chris. Maybe you mentioned this, but I missed it. So this is exempting from 18 to 65,000?
Correct. There were kind of three.
Go ahead. And then the section that starts to get foggy is this 150,000.
Under current law, there are two categories. There's a base $15,000 exemption for veterans or surviving spouses with a disability. That exemption is higher, and the 18,000 are going to 65,000 if they have a service-connected disability of 40% or more. This third category makes it that if that disability is 100% or more, they get the larger exemption of the 150,000. So it takes the one category and splits it into two.
Okay. Gentlemen, I don't think there's anybody up here who doesn't want to do more here. One question, I guess it's more of a comment than a question, but this will help vets who own a home, but it doesn't do anything for vets who can't afford a home or in a tough situation.
Senator Haas, Chairman, that is correct. It is specifically geared towards that segment, but Department of Veterans of Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs Director Fitzpatrick is working greatly to deal with the homeless crisis and veterans homeless crisis. And thanks to the legislation 2 years ago, and when we passed the lottery provisions, there's more money now to deal with that, and they're coming up with new ways with the homeless count to deal with the homeless situation as well. But it's a different channel.
If I may, Chair Haas, given a scenario of one of our wounded warriors coming home, who owned his home, he went as a volunteer over to Afghanistan, comes home, and he's wounded, and he can't work, and he owns his home, so his wife has to go to work to support him. Giving them a break, giving that family a break. That family has an extra burden because they have to take care of a disabled person. Why can't we increase the exemption for that particular scenario? They owned their home before he went. Now, some of the vets that have come that are homeless have been here for a long, long time. We're talking about people who go to Afghanistan and Iraq. That we have people in Oregon that own their own home because, and then they went and volunteered and they got hurt, and now they're struggling to make their property tax payments.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't think there's anybody here you'll get any grief from on that point to do more, but there's another category here I'd sort of almost like to see side by side, but that's probably a thousand things we should do right to do right by our vets. So thank you both for coming. We have two senators here who are sponsors, Senators Manning and Olson.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Chair Haas, Vice Chair Benz, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alan Olson. I am a senator representing Senate District 20, the heart of Clackamas County. It was with great pleasure that Senator James Manning and I bring Senate Bill 500 to this committee. It's taken several sessions to work out the bugs of this bill, but with the support behind this legislation, I think we are there. Senate Bill 500 is a bill to change the exemptions from taxation of the assessed value of the homestead for or personal property of a disabled veteran. As you know, the state of Oregon values real property in two different ways. The first is real market value, which is the actual value of the property in the marketplace. The second method, and the method that is used to calculate your property taxes, is the assessed value of the property. This assessed value was established in the Constitution to limit the growth of taxes to 3% per year. Examples of the difference between RMV, which is the real market value, and assessed value have been provided by Mr. Carl Easton of LRO. I have provided you with this work. It came in a handout I just gave you, or was passed out. For years, 2002 to 2018, annual growth in real market value was 4.3%. For a house with a real market value of $175,000 in 2002, this translates into real market value of about $344,000. For years 1999 through 2018, average annual growth in assessed value was 3.5%. In 1999, the average assessed value for a house was about $142,000. In 2018, the average assessed value for a house was about $272,000. So you can see when we're talking in this market, you can see why affordable housing becomes difficult. The 3.5% increase was due to higher value properties being built. Please remember that the current group of veterans coming home from their missions are buying houses in the $250,000 to $400,000 range and above, much higher than past examples, but it is the reality of our housing market in Oregon. There is very little affordable housing. This history brings us to Senate Bill 500. Disabled veterans of 40% or higher, as certified by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, are given an exemption on their property taxes starting at $15,000 for 40% disabled and $18,000 for 60% disabled and above. These amounts will increase by 3% a year. If you look at the compensation charts I've provided, you will see that from 2001 until December 1st, 2018, compensation rates for disabled veterans have only increased on average 2.4% per year. This barely keeps up with the inflation, let alone increases in the property taxes. Please remember that 3.5% average increase does not include any bond issues outside of the limit. In 1999, ORS 307.250 increased this exemption, which was started much earlier, from $82.50 to $87.50. a mere $500. In 2005, 14 years ago, the $87.50 was increased to $15,000, where it has remained. Senate Bill 500 increases the amounts from $15,000 to $60,000. It increases the $18,000 amount to $65,000. And for those veterans who are 100% disabled, the amount of exemption goes to $150,000. At a recent meeting, Associated Oregon Counties voted unanimously to support this bill. I believe the first reason for the support is to show our veterans who have been disabled that they are important citizens in our community, and it is important that they are able to remain in their homes. Secondly, and most importantly, the counties can set the sidebars and income levels of those 100% disabled so that if the veteran is unable to work, he or she would receive the full $150,000 exemption. If the veteran had a reasonable income due to ability to work, the counties could give the veteran the $65,000 exemption. They will be the arbiters of this legislation. ORS 307 also allows a surviving spouse these benefits until they remarry. All veterans deserve our respect and support, but those that returned from duty in the United States military with a disability gave more than required. They live their lives daily with this disability, some permanently restricted to their homes or wheelchairs. Their disability payment from the government, although welcome, does not keep up with the cost to own and maintain a home while paying the ever-increasing costs of day-to-day living. Senate Bill 500 provides a small amount of relief to their financial uncertainty and helps ensure that our veterans can and will remain in their homes. There will be a cost to this bill, but what costs have our veterans paid? Thank you for your consideration, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you.
Chair Hass, Co-Chair Benz, my name is James Ivory Manning, Jr. I am a senator from Senate District 7, North and West Eugene, up to Junction City. Thank you for this opportunity. Chair Hass, this is the first time I got a chance to come before your committee, and I'm really honored to be here. Likewise, I'm honored to see my colleagues up there, Senator Boquist, Senator Riley, and also Senator Taylor. Thank you so much. Senate Bill 500, as my colleague has mentioned, this is a bill that's designed to help veterans who are really, really on the low end of the pole, veterans that are confined to their homes. But what this bill does is so much more in terms of the spouses or survivor spouses. All too often, when I went into the military, I picked my wife up, uprooted her, and I took her to a strange place, a strange country, and left her there to fend for herself while I was off doing missions in other areas. The spouses and family members serve as well. They endure the hardships that all too often unremarkable feats that we ask and we give them, and they get little or nothing in return. Recently, my brother-in-law, he served two tours in Vietnam. I think he came down with Agent Orange. He went through a process where he lost one leg, and he lost another leg, and eventually he died. My sister, they never divorced. So some of the benefits that he had while going through his transition, she was able to keep. To include the home, she didn't work. She never worked. She was a stay-at-home mom. This is in a different state. So now we're talking about Oregon, where we live. What are we doing to make sure that the veterans that are 100% disabled? There was a mention about what are we going to do about the homeless veterans? And that is a great question. We're doing so many things to try to house the unhoused veterans around. A lot of programs that are in effect. But this bill is specifically designed to those veterans with 100% disabilities, the ones that came back with no legs, the ones that came back with shrapnel in their head and they can't get a job, armless, the ones that are walking around on life support or confined to their homes because they need that in order to survive, those family members that can't go out and get a job because they now become the primary care provider. It takes a real dedication to live and stay with someone under those conditions. So this bill will also provide a help for the surviving spouse. It will help us keep those veterans in homes so that they don't become part of the homeless. This is a really important bill, and I thank you so much for listening. I thank you so much for having us here and this opportunity to be before you. And I hope that you will support this bill moving forward. Thank you so much. Subject to any of your questions.
Thank you. Questions?
We did so well.
For bringing this bill to us.
Thank you, Senator.
We have no one else signed up for this measure, so we'll close out the public hearing on Senate Bill 500. Thank you, Senators. Nice job on getting such a nice round number for your bill, too. I don't know how you pull that off. I've tried. It doesn't work. We are going to go to the tale of two houses and the tale of two businesses and open up a public hearing simultaneously on these two bills. I'll open up a public hearing on SJR 2 and SJR 21. Setting the stage for you, Chris, the tale of two houses and how these referrals might change.
So, Chair Haas, members of the committee, perhaps starting with the SJR 21, it's a little bit easier to describe. It simply pulls Measure 50 out of the Constitution and puts it back into statute, where the legislature it would be required to act any laws necessary to make that transfer of the repealed provisions from the Constitution effective in statute, and that would enable the legislature to make policy decisions modifying the property tax system to deal with some of the issues such as the inequities that you just mentioned. SJR 21 leaves the property tax system in the Constitution, but it amends it, creating a floor of 0.75 for the changed property ratio. That's the ratio of maximum assessed value to real market value. The committee has seen some information in the past where that ratio can be as low as 0.3 or 0.2. And by creating that floor, it would require for any property that is below that 0.75 to be brought up to 0.75. That would happen gradually over 5 years, basically in 20% increments. The measure also, or the resolution, also creates a homestead exemption equal to the lesser of $25,000 or 25% of real market value. And that $25,000 would be adjusted for inflation.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, we have done numerous presentations in this committee on two homes of equal value in the same area, same city, that are paying vastly different property taxes, and that is indeed the problem, and we have said over and over, this is not a money raiser, this is not a tax increase, the intent is not to raise taxes or cut taxes, but to achieve equity here, and we're still throwing darts on the wall as to how to get voters to adopt a change that would restore equity and fairness into our property tax system, one of the basic cornerstones of any kind of tax. So we do have a long line of people who would like to weigh in on both of these bills. So when you come up, tell us which bill you like or don't like, try to identify it, and we'll just go down through the list here. Ree Scholes and Commissioner Jayapal, why don't you start us off?
Slides. There we go. Oh, no, let me shift over. I got it. Chair Haas, members of the committee, I'm Ree Scholes, policy manager in Multnomah County's Office of Government Relations, and we were really fortunate this summer to have an intern from Oregon State University, Dong Din, who's a statistics major and was able to use some computer programs that I don't understand to run rampant through our property tax data and help us understand some things. And I'm here today to share some data with you about some things that we've learned. So this is what we're all talking about. These are two houses that sold in 2017 for nearly the same amount of money, had nearly the same tax rate, have vastly different assessed values and thus vastly different property taxes. We started looking at this from the sale data to get, you see the assessed, the market value on one property is $100,000 more than on the other property. And it turns out that assessments are always behind on fast growing properties. Now let me show you a little more about this. So these are the two properties I just showed you. One is on Northeast 13th and one is on Southwest 14th. And this is a chart like you've seen many times, the charts that show statewide the difference between assessed value and market value. And here we're looking at it on individual properties, on two individual properties. Now, let me see, does my cursor work here? The top one is the Southwest Portland one, and you can see the lighter color line is the assessed value, and it inches up at 3% a year. You can see there in the middle aughts, the housing boom comes up, and then the recession comes in. Two things I want to tell you about this. On the red line, in the less fast-growing neighborhood, the dip for the recession is deep and long. In the fast-growing neighborhood, Northeast Portland, it's much more shallow. The other thing that this shows is if you look at the slope of the light blue line versus the slope of the light red line, this proves that 3% of a small number is less than 3% of a large number. So whenever you start at a lower point, you're going to grow much less per year. This is arithmetic. Okay. Now I want to show you a somewhat more extreme example. These are two properties that we picked not based on their sale value, but because in 2017 they were both had an assessed value of $700,000. Again, it's a property in North Portland and a property in Southwest Portland. Now, the first thing I want to tell you about this is I want to talk about the little TP-shaped thing right over the 1995. This is a property that was assessed at $20,000 in 1995 because it hadn't been reassessed in 8 years and we were behind. The assessor got out there and the assessment went up to $124,000. And then Measure 50 kicked in, and it was 10% less than the 1995 assessment. So we have a collection of properties that were reassessed for the first time in many years in 1996, and then the constitutional changes skipped 1996 and went back to 10% below 1995. And that's the cause of many of our most extreme ratios. If you look at the blue line at the very bottom of that, you can see that if you're at $20,000 in 1997, 3% on $20,000 is not a lot of money. It was 2010 before they passed $30,000. And this the blue property here on North Commercial has a ratio that's well under 10%. Now the Southwest property, the red line at the top, again, you see the run up with the housing boom and then the recession. Once again, the blue line has a much smaller dip from the recession. The red line actually goes down below the assessed value. So the market value becomes the assessed value for a while there. And this is not unusual. This is a property that's grown at about 3%, right? So it's back and forth with that. The last thing I want to show you is back on the blue line, there's a very steep curve going into 2017. League of Oregon Cities had a report a couple sessions ago about the capitalization of the tax advantage. Many of us would believe, although it's hard to prove, that rapid increase in that property value was not unrelated to its very low tax burden. In other words, the low tax burden is being capitalized on the sale prices of the low ratio properties. And that, of course, is a self-reinforcing cycle. Keeps getting worse. Thanks to our Division of Assessment, Reporting, and Taxation, we have this heat map of ratios across the county. The key is in the upper right hand. You can see that the darkest blue is the ratios below 10%, like that property I showed you on North Commercial. And at the other end, the red properties are greater than 90%. You can almost see the outline of the district that was reassessed in 1996. It's that dark blue area right in the heart of Northeast Portland. And you can and outside of that, you can see that the area between the river and I-205 has much lower ratios than either the east end or the west end of our county. Now, remember these colors here, dark blue the lowest, red the highest. Now we looked at it in a different way. We looked at the whole county, and we looked at how our property is distributed by the ratios. And you see that 40 to 50% has the highest number, about 50,000 properties. And if you go down to the key under that, you see that that's 23.5% of the of the total number of residential properties in 2017 in Multnomah County. This gives you an idea of how many winners and how many losers there are under our current system, and it's our hope that this may be helpful to you as you're crafting solutions. Now, now I'm getting to my last slide. I want you to remember that top green line there, those 49,000, because now we're going to look at 3 years. So that highest bar on 40% is indicated on my gold thing here. I can't point to it. The gold line is the same chart as the one I just showed you. That's the it's top of the gold line. The reason I'm showing you this is because we also have it for 2000 and 2010. So the blue line is 2000, and what you see is that in Multnomah County, we were in a very narrow band. There are over 90,000 properties were in the 70 to 80% band right after these measures passed. And what's happened is it's spread out, and in this chart, it's moved to the left, or moved to the lower ratios. And if 2017, you look at the most year, it's more and more of those different ratios are populated. So when I said to my intern, the statistics major, I said, "Dom, it looks like we're approaching randomness." And he said, "No, Reese, that randomness is totally different. What we're approaching is no correlation. No correlation between the value of a property and the value that it pays taxes on." So this is some data that we've collected. Dom did additional research, and we hope to be helpful to you in any way we can.
I appreciate that. Of all those slides, the one I think that resonates the most, if you want to go back to it, is the first one.
Oh, this one?
Yeah. And that's just a simple inequity there.
Right.
This is unfair.
And these are, Chair Hass, these are relatively normal. I showed you an exceptional one. These are not uncommon. This is typical in our county.
Good afternoon, Chair Hass, Vice Chair Benz, and members of the committee. My name is Sushila Jayapal. I'm the new Multnomah County Commissioner for District 2, North and Northeast Portland. Thank you for allowing me time to talk to you about SJR 2. Reese has laid out, and you all already know, the inequities created by our property tax system. A system that has, as that slide showed you, two homes with similar market values paying significantly different amounts in property taxes is, simply put, as you put it, Chair Hass, unfair. In Multnomah County, we see this unfairness playing out between properties within blocks of each other. Perhaps one was in terrible condition back in 1995 when the rates were locked in, and so it's now paying taxes on a far lower assessed value than a nearby home that had a higher valuation at the time. And we also see it playing out, and you saw this in the chart of Multnomah County as a whole, we see it playing out between properties, between neighborhoods that have experienced rapid gentrification, where values back in 1995 were relatively low and have since skyrocketed, and those where values have not risen as dramatically. This form of inequity correlates strongly with the displacement of communities of color across the county. As property values have risen in those rapidly gentrifying neighborhoods, particularly on the Inner East Side in my district, people of color have been pushed farther out to East Portland or East County neighborhoods, where the ratio of assessed value to fair market value is much higher. The net result is that those communities of color, who are also predominantly lower income, are paying proportionately more in property taxes than the more affluent folks who've moved into the gentrified neighborhoods. So the system is not only unfair in that there are discrepancies in the rates at which equivalent properties are taxed, but it's also a system that in many cases falls most heavily on lower income people and people of color. For all these reasons and more, we need to reform our system. SJR 2 is a step in the right direction by bringing assessed values closer to fair market values and establishing a minimum ratio. It decreases these inequities. There are some details, however, that I think need further consideration. First, the phase-in period. This bill has a phase-in plan of 5 years. In that 5 years, many of my constituents would see their taxes increase by more than 200%. incomes have not risen as rapidly as property values. And that large a year-over-year increase would be difficult for many of my constituents and homeowners across the state to deal with. And that large and rapid an increase would create a significant backlash, which would reduce likelihood of passage by voters. I would strongly urge consideration of a substantially longer phase-in period to ease transition to a new system. And second, we need to consider the impact of these sorts of changes on homeowners who live on fixed incomes and on low-income renters at risk of further displacement as a result of a pass-through of property tax increases. These low-income homeowners and renters would be at risk of losing their homes if we don't provide a mechanism for relief. And this is true statewide as well. We need to make sure that we protect people who've spent years paying off their mortgages so that they can live comfortably as they age. The homestead exemption proposed in the bill provides some relief, but I believe we ought to consider more direct, means-tested relief. In conclusion, property tax reform is necessary for Multnomah County and for counties across the state. It's necessary because the system we adopted with Measures 5 and 50 had unintended and inequitable consequences. As we move forward with reform, I ask that you consider these changes to make sure that we don't create further unintended consequences. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions from Multnomah County? Thank you both. Appreciate your work. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Maybe have that intern apply with Legislative Revenue Office. Eric Fruits.
Thank you, Chairman Haas, Vice Chair Benson, members of the committee. So I signed up to testify in opposition to 21 and neutral on SJR 2, mainly because I think SJR 2 has a lot of moving parts. I haven't really been able to formulate exactly how I think about that. But I think one issue with SJR 2 is, that's the one that gets rid of Measure 50, is to go back into the future and say, well, why did we pass Measure 50 in the first place? By a pretty big margin. And remember, the reason why we passed Measure 50 was because of what was known then as the tax revolt. We had a lot of huge tax increases for a lot of years, and it really made people upset. And they, had people who are on fixed income, elderly, and so forth, who said, how am I going to handle a double-digit tax increase? And so this tax revolt gave us Measure 50. But, one of the upsides, it is inequitable. There's a lot of crazy things about Measure 50 and our tax system. But, it's our tax system, and it's our crazy. And so there's some things we should like about it. And one of the things that we should like about it, actually, is it does give us a lot of certainty, stability in our property tax revenues. We know that property tax revenues are going to go up by at least 3% every year. And in Multnomah County, they go up more because we pass levies. And so we have that stability. The last figure from Multnomah County had some really interesting stuff. If you tied it to, say, real market value, you are going to have huge swings in property tax revenues from year to year. The next recession, we'll not just get hammered on income taxes, we'll get hammered on the property taxes too, and then what do we do? SJR 2 is, it's borderline evil. I mean, it's a really, really bad idea. Because if you look at the heat map that was presented with Multnomah County, 90% of properties in Multnomah County will see a property tax increase. The way SJR 2 is currently written, no one will be better off. No one can get will get their property taxes reduced. You will only see your property taxes increased. If you look at a typical property in Multnomah County, assessed at, I think, $216,000 with a real market value of about $450,000, you would see a property tax increase of about 45%. And I don't care if it's done over 5 years. That's still going to be a lot. You take it on commercial properties, and then you have some real interesting impacts on small businesses. In my neighborhood, we've got Music Millennium. That's the place that is famous for the Keep Portland Weird sticker. They own their own building. Under SJR 21, their property taxes would increase by $35,000. They would quintuple. That means five times. That's huge. And remember, this is a record store, right? You have to sell a lot of records to make that nut. And they're competing in a global market, in a sense, a global market where you have online sales. They can't just raise prices and pass it on. They can't just sell more records. One last example, the Laurelhurst Club, which is a little nonprofit dance studio that hosted the Laurelhurst Neighborhood Association board meetings for years, their property tax bill would increase by, I believe, $8,000. That would be roughly double or triple what they currently pay. And that's for a nonprofit, not a 501c3, but a nonprofit local community group. And that's all under SJR 221. I think that one is just so the inequities in the transition, rather than the inequities we have, the transition from where we are now to where we would be under SJR 21, it's just going to cause a huge amount of pain. And I think that one is one we should probably reject. SJR 2, I think we should spend a little bit more time thinking about. Thank you very much.
Eric, I just want to clarify something, that the intent of SJR 21 is not to repeal the measure, rather than it is to take it out of the Constitution and put it into the state law.
I may have mixed them up, and I apologize.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about the one that this 0.75 AV to, or RMV to AV, that's 21, right? Just the other way around. I should have brought my notes. I was trying to wing it. Yes, I understand that. So the one where we take it out of the Constitution, put it into the legislature, I would say I'm neutral on.
I think you could argue, I mean, I don't think it was a terrible idea, Measure 95, to stabilize growth and property taxes. But the benchmark language was flawed. And because it was in the Constitution, you know, we couldn't do like we do with a lot of tax laws, tweak it every session. Can't go to voters every year and say, we're just going to do a tweak. So now 20 years later, it's way out of whack. And that's how you have these one homeowner with the same value house paying $2,000 and another guy paying $10,000.
Well, I think I'll agree with you on that one. I'm not a big fan of putting real nitty-gritty stuff into the Constitution. I think that should be more broad-based stuff. I think what's interesting was that story about the property that was $20,000 and got reassessed. You know, again, look back, why was Measure 50 written the way it was? Because they wrote it knowing that if you said, oh, well, we're going to do it next year, you're going to have a bunch of assessors running out there reassessing stuff to gin up the property prices, because that would get baked into the cake. And so, I mean, that was intentional. It wasn't an accident that they did that. And, you know, sometimes when you're making an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. At least that's what I hear around here a lot.
Questions? Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Woody Johnson, Pete Truax, and Sean Cleve.
Thorn between two roses, how nice.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, my name is Wendy Johnson, here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I've got a PowerPoint to go through, and I'll hit through them quickly because you've already heard some of the material already. But we thank you for holding this hearing and talking about property tax. For the League, this is a priority again for this session. It's in the top five. Property taxes are important because it's our number one revenue source. Like the state relies on income taxes, cities rely on property taxes, and the system, as you've heard, is really broken. Another one of our priorities this session is housing and homelessness, and those issues really do overlap this session. So this is the big picture of why it matters. Over $6.7 billion a year in property taxes. In personal income taxes, you're at $7.6 billion. So this is a significant revenue source, and here it's broken down into who receives that. It does pay for a third of the school budget. The measures that are up today really are about Measure 50, not Measure 5. And Measure 50 really did four key things that I just want to remind people of, and that's why we've ended up with this disparity. It created this new term of assessed value. So it's not real market value like lots of other places. And what is assessed value? Well, it was real market value minus 10%. So it was a 10% discount that started in 1995. But now that discount doesn't look that way anymore because we're no longer taking the real market value today. So just remember that 10%, because it's in red, because that's what keeps changing. It also capped the annual growth. It can only go 3% of what that AV is. And lastly, it set permanent rates, and that's the rates that cities, counties, and school districts have. I get calls quite often of, well, how do I change our permanent rate? It's not working for us. And it really is permanent. And there's disparities there. Those aren't really addressed in these bills. It's really about the AV issue. What's the key problem? From Measure 50, it really is this inequity between properties, and just it's what it is, is its valuation. when there's this gap. Originally, it was supposed to be a 10% gap, and now that gap has changed. And it also is for new properties that you have to create what that discount is, and we don't give them a 10% discount for new property. We give them the average of the assessed value and the real market value in the county to come up with what their discount is. And so that's what the problem is that we're trying to address. So why does that assessed value matter? And it's because of this math formula that figures out, you use that to figure out your taxes. If you have something wrong in the valuation, the property value, that's everybody's different on how you value, when you get to the end for your math formula, value minus any exemptions times the tax rate, and then with Oregon, we have to adjust taxes at the very end with the Measure 5 limits. But if that first number has the disparity, it creates the inequities in your actual tax bill. So today, we really are focusing on that first part of the math formula, property value. But some of the previous folks talked about how their taxes would go up so much if we switched to real market value. I don't believe that's correct, because it's a local decision. Every tax year, they have to, the local government, the county or the city, the school district, special district, they have to decide what to assess. They have to vote on what that's going to be assessed. We have permanent rates, so you can't go above that permanent rate, but it's a decision every year. And we have cities that do not assess their full permanent rate. They have that authority under Measure 50 to go up to their permanent rate, but they don't assess. Beaverton is an example. They do not assess their full permanent rate. So just because you fix this to make it the value right does not mean people's taxes go up. It would be a local decision of whether to assess their full value. And I suspect it would be a local decision to change that, because their voters would revolt if it went up that much. So I just want to keep in folks to keep in mind that this is a local decision on property taxes. The state does not set what property taxes are. It is a local decision. It's a local decision whether to do a levy. The voters have to pass it. It's a local decision whether to do a geo bond. Now, the permanent rates have been baked in with Measure 50. We're stuck at that, but it is a local decision every year to decide what to assess. So I think you need to keep that in mind. Here's the gap. This is the state average. This is looking, the blue line is the assessed value and the red line is the real market value. As I said, originally when the voters passed it, it was a 10% gap, and now the total is a 35% gap. But that really breaks down by counties totally different. And this is a slide that we've stolen from Legislative Revenue Office and given them credit here. It's one of my favorite charts, because it's called the box plot, or box plot with whiskers. Those whiskers, the lines on the ends, that shows there are properties all the way from almost down to zero, all the way up to almost 100% in most counties. The box part for each county shows where most of the properties are located, or where they're assessed. Most of them are in the above 50%, but less than 75%. But they're all over the map, and it really is an unfair situation that we've got here. And my understanding is the little diamonds in each box are the average, and the little line is the median. So those are trying to figure out what all the charts here mean. But obviously Multnomah County, number 26, has the lowest from where we started with the 90%. They're down well below 50%. But the houses are all over the map on that. So here's the slide that's been used by many now that it's become popular, the Tale of Two Houses. Here's two in Salem. Here's two in Portland. Over $3,000 difference in taxes for these. But what we did in the last year is we really looked at a new issue of, well, is it the same for businesses? Do they have such inequities? Yeah, and it turns out some are even bigger gaps. This is the tale of two gas stations, one on Barber in Portland and one on Interstate in Portland. They both were about $1.4 million. That's why we chose them. And on OLIS, you'll see a list of 98 gas stations, and we've taken out the exact address. We've just given you the number, so we're not picking on anybody's property taxes. But you'll see that we go from the yellow one, which is 18% of what they're paying on the real market value, to the higher end is in the 60%. And that's just on 98 properties that, you know, we've got over a 40% difference, and they're just doing the same thing of selling gas and having a convenience store. And the properties are essentially the same. I know this is tiny, so you'll see on OLIS, I have two documents. One is the PowerPoint presentation, and one is this in a Word document that it goes through each property. And here's the gas stations, the 98 depicted as a map. The darker circle, those are the winners, and the redder you get, those are the losers. It's pretty random, but you can see from my predecessor of how it really is based on when the assessments were made and how neighborhoods have gentrified, of why you have such disparities. So that's kind of our quick conclusion here. Really, the league's priority is to bring back tax reform, but it's to be the first step. We totally agree with Senator Haas that it needs to be about fairness first before we start monkeying with anything else, and we do not have fairness now, and you can do that. As I said, cities and counties and special districts and schools, we set our tax rate, but we can't fix the inequity on that first part of how do you value the property. That has to be done by the voters because it is locked up in the Constitution. We think that these are really good steps. There's some, you know, details with with SJR2, but 21, just getting it so that you can work on it, that we can deal with the complexities, as that's the hard part, is we all know it's broken, but trying to make it work in all 36 counties and 241 cities will take work, and we think putting it in statute is the right move. And we thank you with that concept, which is pretty creative, but makes a lot of sense. I think we all recognize that over 20 years, it's broken and not fair. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Mayor?
Thank you, Chair Haston, committee. I'm Pete Truax, the mayor, city of Forest Grove, also past president of the LOC, and by virtue of that questionable bit of merit, and I'm the ex officio member of the board of directors for LOC. All the credit and none of the votes. I'm also a member of Metropolitan Mayors Consortium, collection of mayors from around and in the metro area, and obviously interested in moving towards equity in home ownership and taxation. And I want to thank the committee for the opportunity to offer my testimony on this subject. If I could move away from this particular conversation and act on something that the commissioner from Multnomah County said a little bit earlier, talk about gentrification and people being forced to move out of their areas, specifically in North Portland, for the first to Southeast Portland, then to Gresham, and then to other areas, maybe in Clackamas County. All of a sudden, their commute time to their work, which was may have been 20 minutes, is now an hour and a half. And that plays havoc with our transportation system and with the transportation budget. And that's also another example of the inequity sometimes caused by some of this home ownership difficulties. And I realize that property tax reform is its own third rail, and it's a touchy subject for all of us. Two overriding issues should be equity and allowing local governments to do the job they're mandated to do. For example, in Forest Grove, our permanent rate is $3.95 per thousand assessed value. On top of that, we have a five-year local option levy of $1.60. per thousand. And when we put together a brochure on of education on that levy, every time we moved to renew or increase that levy, we had to put together an education program and an advocacy program. And one of the things we do is we put up on the slideshow for the audiences at the open houses my tax bill, how much I pay for the privilege of living in the city of Forest Grove. People get a great delight out of seeing how much their mayor pays on that. I can't understand that. And they also like to find out how much my house is worth. Some of them say, geez, I make more. I get my house is worth more than the mayor's. Well, to make a long story short, if you add the permanent rate and local option rate, you get $5.30 per thousand. My assessed value of $246,000 means I pay $971 on the permanent rate, $393 on the voter-approved option. With our budgeting, that means 48% of our general fund budget goes to police service, and that totals $654. The fire and rescue share at 30% is $409. That totals $1,063, or $92 more than what I pay off my permanent rate. We can't pay for our police and fire in Forest Grove without that local option levy. That means I don't pay enough in that permanent rate to pay what many consider to be essential local services, and we only, with the local option rate, then we have to pay for libraries and park and rec and all of those other services that many people also consider essential to the life of a city. There would still be shortfalls if we take a look at reorganizing the system, but I don't think they'd be as severe as with the real market value and taking time to bring this into alignment would make it fairer and maybe even less painful. Thank you very much for your time. Questions?
Thank you. Sean?
Chair Hass, members of the committee, glad to be here today representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. Currently, we're neutral on both pieces of legislation, but we're more than willing to sit down at the table and try to work something out. I think Oregonians are looking for a tax system that's equitable, transparent, and predictable. We have predictability, although some might argue that 3% is quite a lot to increase year over year. We were very intrigued by your 2017 bill, SJR3, as a starting point to work off of. We also have some problems with service delivery charges being a little bit outrageous for your average family to afford. And I think there's an opportunity to couple a property tax reform with SDC reform, although that might add insult to injury. Our tax system is a Rube Goldberg machine of biblical proportions, and we need to tread lightly on how we move forward. Again, happy to be there on the behalf of the realtors if these bills are worked through a work group.
Yeah, I appreciate that engagement because I know that realtors commonly advertise properties in these low tax areas as a selling point. That shouldn't be an amenity.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that is the case, Senator Hass. We, Sean Gillians, who was the government affairs director, now our contract lobbyist, and I have both been pushing our membership and our executive and government affairs committee to articulate a position on exactly what a good property tax system might look like. How do you actually implement and what the path forward might be is difficult, but they will absolutely recognize that there's some inequities in the system, and I won't belabor the point. I think Ms. Johnson and prior presenters did a great job of outlining some of those inequities. One area that we are very concerned of moving forward would be some sort of point of sale reset. That can be a big club, and the representative from Multnomah County did a good job outlining some of the particular populations that would be vulnerable in those situations. We have a definite shortage in housing, 155,000 units short that we need tomorrow just to make even for our supply-demand curve for housing. We have some unique land use laws that have provided an opportunity for preservation of farm and forest land as a avenue for NIMBYism at a gross scale. I used to represent the Oregon Farm Bureau on land use. That's where Mrs. Johnson and I came together, and we worked on estate tax reform for farm and fishery and forestry owners. Very proud of that work, and I think we can tackle this and see where we can go.
Questions of this panel, Senator Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, refresh my memory, anybody, the chair, Chris, you guys, of when the last serious attempt to address this issue occurred?
Before my time, Representative Benz, I don't think it has actually gotten, at least in my recollection of the building, not necessarily always working on housing issues. I don't know if this bill has ever got to the point where it hit a floor vote.
No, it's just been, Chair Hass, Senator Benz, there's just been multiple task forces. Governors had many blue ribbon, prior governors, many blue ribbon, all saying we need to fix it. Senator Hass has been the first to really put forward several bills to start hearings, but we haven't ever gotten out of committee.
Follow.
Yes.
So it appears that if the current condition continues, at some point something becomes so out of whack there will be lawsuits filed because of the sheer inequity of it all. Has that been a thought or pursued?
Senator Benz not being an attorney, or Chair Hass, Senator Benz not being an attorney, I can say I think that our legal strategy is great, but that's because I'm a lobbyist. But I think that there are merits to exploring that kind of inequities. I know that in Texas, there were some land use provisions that were causing gentrification, and they were specific specific programs designed to achieve the opposite, but the effect had gentrified neighborhoods in a very negative way, and that went to the Supreme Court. I do think that the inequities in the property tax system might avail itself, but quite honestly, Chair Haas, Senator Benz, I'd probably ask you that question first.
Chair Haas, Senator Benz, I'd like to respond to that one. The League actually considered that several years ago when things were getting really bad, but it had been so many years since the passage of Measure 50 that our consultation with legal counsel and retired justices was that would be a tough sell. And partially because, yes, we have an equitable tax provision in the Constitution, but Measure 50 also has a provision that says that it can be inequitable because of Measure 50. So put those two together, that's why we have to move that portion of Measure 50 out. We have to leave the inequity there if we want to try to keep it some degree of not changing everything at once, but those two provisions together are just really awkward from a constitutional law perspective. We don't think we could challenge it in court the way the Constitution is right now.
Thank you.
Senator Boquist. Let me address the attempt question, because it really is the fundamental issue that we have here, because this is all really nice. We've talked about the tale of two houses last time, Mr. Chair. We're talking about the tale of whose house, but let's just get beyond to the 800-pound gorilla here, okay? Because the tale of two houses and the inequity is just flat out there. You can take testimony all day long. We took testimony before. It exists. Here's the 800-pound gorilla. Associated counties, or the cities and the counties, have not put an initiative on the ballot to repeal, Measure 50, so therefore it's not repealed. In the evil grand bargain scheme, Chris was fairly still not involved directly, but you can go talk to Dr. Warner, and we spent immense amount of time locked in rooms. This was one of the number one topics we talked about. We went through every particular dynamic there, and if you care to go back to Mr. Reese's slide that has the GISing out there, LRO produced one of those with state economists for basically the area of JPAC, the three counties. Why did we do that? Because the three counties can elect a governor, they can pass a tax measure, they can kill a tax measure, and they did in fact pass Measure 50. And when we GIS that out and we match it to almost the exact thing the intern did for Mr. Reese, it turned out that virtually everybody would get a tax increase. And just to be fair here, some of us did throw money in the pot and we polled it, and you know where it went? In the toilet. I just want to point out, Republicans put money in, and we looked at the polling to figure out how do you repeal 50, because it is going to pass or die in the area of JPAC, or as I now call by transportation, Portlandia, those three counties, those 22 cities, right, those eight different districts out there. And so it's unfair, it's inequitable, it is all that stuff. The question boils down to is, can you pass it? And even if this legislature, what we're really asking in this discussion is the legislature put some plan together, whatever it is, and throw it out on the ballot and see what happens, because that's what it's going to be, because you're not going to, the cities can't go out and raise a bunch of money and pass this thing. I mean, there's nobody going to be championing these out in the community. So there is the 800-pound gorilla. The system's broke. It's like the Switzerland income tax system. But it boils down to a simple fact that we came to the conclusion when the grand bargain was passed that we couldn't touch. You can get Dr. Warner in here, you can get Lee Beyer in here, you can get Jenny Burdick in here, and it boiled down to that map that good intern did for Mr. Reese, put across the three counties. You just couldn't figure out how to get over the top of that. So there's our obstacle, and I think if you've recognized, Mr. Chair, is you gotta have a carrot in there somehow to get them to vote for it, to get 51%. So there it is. I'm perfectly happy to work on it. I agree the system's broke. I just want to remind that some counties that some of us represent didn't vote for this thing. I don't think some of your counties voted for this thing because we wanted local control. But it passed in the metro areas, and so you got to get past the metro areas. So the real question for me when people testify from the cities and the counties and all that, what are you going to do if something gets put on the ballot? I mean, moral support doesn't help us. You guys all know what it costs for a ballot measure. So there you go, Mr. Chair.
Well, that is one of the realities. It has to pass by a vote of the people. And I know the cities or counties are both polled a few years ago on some of these. And the language, to make any of these changes, reset on sale or repeal Measure 50, is so necessarily complicated that every voter in Oregon would have to get a tax attorney to help them figure out how to vote. And we know what happens when people are confused or about a property tax question, they're going to vote no. So we did put a carrot out there in 2015 at a homestead exemption, and that brought in a new set of complications because one size doesn't fit all, and you know, and so we're still throwing darts here, but I think we're getting very close to what some people have called a converting to a broken system to a system in collapse. And that's when this guy that's paying $10,000 comes in to the assessor and says, this system's broken, and I'm not going to pay for it until you fix it. And then the gas station owner comes, yeah, me too. And then two more, and then who knows? But that's we're getting really close to that. And we always say those kinds of tax collapses happen in banana republics. We'd like to think they shouldn't be happening in Oregon. Mm-hmm. So I guess we're just all commenting here. So thank you for your testimony.
You're welcome.
We're going to move on down the list, and I have Chris Robinson next.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name's Chris Robinson. I'm an attorney, been practicing for over 40 years, and for the last 30 plus years, it's been in the area of property tax. So I live it, breathe it every day. And I've seen what happened. I was here before Measure 5. I was practicing in this area and with Measure 50, and I've seen what has transpired. I would agree with everybody that they're inequities. I think both these joint resolutions I can't support right now. SJR 2 raising the assessed value or making the ratio for all property 75%, I think would have a very negative effect on development, both of new housing and commercial and industrial development. Part of what we do in our consulting work is we deal with developers of all kinds of apartments, office buildings, and part of what they ask us to do is, what is our tax burden going to be when we're complete? And so we do that, and that's part of their feasibility analysis to go or not go ahead with the development of the property, because they're trying to forecast what our operating expense is going to be when we're finished and we have stabilized occupancy. So that would be my real concern, because we have seen in this good economy a lot of development, especially in Multnomah County, in the Tri-County area. We've seen a lot of development. If the developers knew and investors knew that when they were complete, that they would be assessed at 75% of market value, I think you're going to see a real decline in economic development in this state, which I don't think any of us want. I think what everybody has talked about is, how do we get uniformity? And I don't see how SJR2 gets us there. All it means is, I think everybody would pay more. I don't think anybody is going to get any tax relief measure. And there was a comment made that, you know, that how this would work is really a local decision with counties and cities. I disagree with that statement, because ORS 308-232 says that the assessors are required by law to value property 100% of market value, real market value. There's no discounting that they can do. They're required by statute to do that. And there's just a lack of detail in the, I didn't see any real, I saw the PowerPoints of just how this would work. Let's say you have a house and you appeal the real market value. Would the 70, and got a reduction, would the 75% then be applied to that? Or would you be working against the 75% of the original market value, and you might get a reduction and no relief? So for that reason, I oppose SJR 2. SJR 21, I think, could have some legs, but there's just no detail. I don't know what I'm voting for. I don't know what I'm looking at. My understanding is that you'd be taking the Measure 50 provisions out of the Constitution and putting them in the statutes. But I don't see how that doing that gives the legislature, I guess the idea would be that the legislature would tweak Measure 50. I'll use the word tweak. But again, for the things, all the inequities everyone's been talking about here today, I don't see how tweaks get us there. I mean, reset upon sale of the property, like California Prop 13, I think that even creates more inequities, because the house next to you sells and so gets a current reset. You've been in your property 20 years and you pay a third of what they pay. So I don't think that's not really what we're talking today, but that's been kind of thrown out there. So the horizontal inequities, they're there. Part of them are a function of when the property was built. In 2014, if you built a new commercial property in Clackamas County, the assessment ratio was 90%. So, and it's come down. You have inequities in assessments for commercial and industrial properties as well. You could have an office building on one side of the border, Multnomah County, that's being an assessment ratio, new construction, its assessment ratio is, I'll say, 36%. That same property across the boundary, same exact, let's just say, it's exactly the same. Income property, same square footage, same quality, could have an assessment ratio in excess of 60%. Or around 60%. So the inequities are not limited to residential. They're all over the map. What I guess with all the other big bills that this session, this legislature has in front of it, with the gross receipts tax and business activity tax, carbon and cap and carbon, is what I would suggest is everybody hit the pause button. And I know there's been work groups. Unfortunately, I've been doing this forever. I've never been invited to any of these work groups or task forces to figure out how we fix it. I'd be glad to be part of that discussion. But what I think would be to everyone's benefit is have a work group with stakeholders, all sides, all points of view, see if we can come back to the legislature with some common ground. So we're not just spinning our wheels, that is there some way that we can agree to some kind of reform that people will buy into. Thank you. No questions.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your time.
Judy Weiser.
Good afternoon, Chair Hass and members, and a couple of members of the committee. When we sat down to think about how we would testify about these two bills yesterday, we quickly realized that we were the examples of the homeowners that are often spoken of. John Calhoun lives on a wooded lot in a neighborhood of larger lots and dug fir trees on a road that is more of a lane than a street. I live on a wooded lot in a neighborhood of larger lots with a road that's really more of a lane than a stream. I pay taxes at 35% of my real market value. He pays taxes at 72% of his real market value. Pretty dramatic differences. Our colleague, Bennett Minton, who you've all recently met, moved to Oregon not long ago, bought a bungalow last summer on a standard block in one of the North Portland's trendy neighborhoods for nearly $600,000. His property taxes are virtually frozen. Those were his words, at $1,760. He pays taxes at 12% of his real market value. When he was shopping, he quickly saw that he could look at similar houses a mile from each other, and some were assessed at $8,000. He bought one that was was assessed to pay taxes at $8,000, and he bought one where he paid taxes at $1,760. And then he went online looking for why is our tax system so crazy, and that's how he found Tax Fairness Oregon. These differences are clearly out of line with Oregon's tax fairness goals that are in our revised statutes. The goals for this assembly are to achieve for Oregon citizens a tax system that recognizes fairness and equity as its base values, and that the total tax system should use 7 guiding principles as measures by which to evaluate tax proposals. Ability to pay, our property tax system doesn't have much to do with that. Fairness, we certainly don't have that. Efficiency, well, it's not, I mean, a computer can figure it out, so I guess it's not so hard, and you don't really have to reassess anymore because the 3% decides it. Even distribution, no, not at all. The weight of property taxes isn't fair. It's not evenly distributed, and it's not equitable. And it's time for the legislature to take action on it. We actually think there is a proposal that might pass, and that is that we start by changing property taxes for commercial and industrial properties. There's a bill in the House that would suggest that we do that. It needs work just like these bills would need work to move, and the idea has not been polled. But it would seem more likely that that would work than to try to change taxes for everybody. Why are taxes so different? In 1995, the assessor saw the Calhoun home as a nicer home in a stable, better West Hills neighborhood with no chance of future development. The Weiser home was in a nice but smaller home sitting on an acre in a small rural neighborhood with no public utilities. Each home needed a well and septic system. Today, the neighborhood is surrounded by hundreds of $600,000 to $900,000 homes. With the homes came a street and utilities abutting the property. Today, there's room to add 4 houses to the lot. Nearly every nearby home has at least one highly educated high-tech worker. Their children fill Beaverton School District's highest-rated schools. Both of these have added exponentially to the home's value. The Minton home, a lovely older bungalow in a rapidly gentrifying, trendy North Portland neighborhood, one of the dark blue areas on Reese's map, are where the best values in property taxes now exist. It is time to stop basing our property taxes on 1995 assessed values minus 10% and 3% a year since. We need to be doing something based on our current realities, and we need to find a place to start. Thank you.
Thank you, Joy. Appreciate your testimony. Thank you. Appreciate all the testimony we had today. Senator Benz?
Well, Mr. Chair, it seems to me that Senator Boqvist, having been there and done that and willing to do it again, warrants psychological intervention, probably. But it seems to me that there's a number of issues. I didn't ask any of the questions about them because we all are aware of what the answers are going to be. The question is, who wants to go back in and start working on it? So we need to take a run at it, because it is, I agree with you that the situation will eventually fracture in ways we couldn't, probably won't like.
Yes, the Banana Republic. Yes. We are closer than most of us would probably like to admit.
Yes.
Okay, we'll leave on that somber note. Thank you all. We have nothing else before us. We are adjourned.
Good morning.